If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. It's your host DK, and with me today, not as always, but our lovely host of the exclusive episodes of the podcast, James.
I'm back. They said it wouldn't happen, and it did.
Yeah, well, welcome back, James. Thanks for being on
the podcast.
Yeah, every week we do exclusive episodes on our Patreon, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. We do have a bunch of sponsors, but that's probably, we are our own main sponsor. Wait, mm-hmm. Did I say that right? The main sponsor of our podcast is us.
Sure.
And the exclusive, and the exclusive episodes.
Our main sponsor is you, the people.
You, the people. All right, so today we're talking about a really well-done video, I honestly think, and an interesting topic by Nick from Panorama Mastering. He did a quick video on, well, I say quick, it's 41 minutes long, about a tier list for client acquisition, including 27 methods of client acquisition tier list. So we're going to kind of go over that, talk about our own experiences, because I think it's pretty good. It's a great list. And I think it's pretty accurate to how I feel about it. And we'll just talk a little bit more in detail, especially for people that haven't watched that video yet. Mm-hmm. But of course, like anybody that we mentioned and stuff, feel free to subscribe to them on YouTube. So that's Panorama Mixing and Mastering on YouTube. So it starts with S tier, A tier, B tier, C tier, D tier, F tier. By the way, the culture around having things above A and going into S tier is a Japanese thing. Did you know that?
Oh, no. What does it come from?
All right. I don't know. Super.
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 Soup e super.
Yeah. Yeah, you should say it with a different intonation until it becomes Italian.
Super.
It's a super. okay, so today we're going to go down. So we're going to start with the S tier stuff and then go down. And then we're going to talk about each individual thing in the context that we've done. I know James has, I honestly am convinced that, I don't know, we're about to find out this episode, but I feel that James has actually tried more of these methods than me and Lou have combined recently. Lou and I have done probably a lot of this stuff over time, but recently I think James is doing really hot. So I think it's perfect episode for James to be on this. So number one on the S tier, word of mouth and repeat clients. Those are the two things. So word of mouth and repeat clients.
Yeah.
Before we dive into any of those, do you want to say anything?
I can attest to that. It's one of those things where with this list, the order in which they're kind of ranked, it does kind of go in order of once you've already got the client to keep getting more work, if that makes sense. So like the S tier ones work because you've already gotten those clients, and then getting them back is in some ways, I guess, harder, but like in other ways, easier, because then you just have to make sure you're consistent and you did a really good job. And that's kind of what we'll keep it there. Especially word of mouth. I feel like in music, recommending someone is like essentially recommending yourself. So you're putting your reputation on risk if you're recommending someone. And so it's just a matter of like when you're working with someone, doing high quality work, being very reliable, and showing that you're trustworthy. Well, I think that's like one of the best ways to get a word of mouth or get clients to represent you.
Right. It's interesting. I've heard somewhere in the past, I don't know where this is quoted from, but I've heard someone that I respect say something along the lines of like, you pay rent with your repeat clients. Like, you don't pay rent with new clients.
Yeah.
You know, and we do get, you know, quite a bit of like one off, maybe two or three times, you know, but like very few time clients. Like, our best clients that help us make a living full time are the ones that have some sort of a system or a flow or some sort of like consistency in their work.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the best ones. Like, so if you can work obviously for like an agency or like a manager that just constantly has work coming in.
Yeah.
That makes life easy, right? That's how you pay. Or like a regular client that's like constantly working on new music, new mixes, producers, mm-hmm. right? That are always working with new artists that have a constant flow of work coming in. So yeah, dude, repeat clients is how you pay rent.
Yeah. And something, it's a combination of repeat clients, but I think this will technically go under word of mouth, even though it involves Instagram. For clients, this is something I like doing. For clients that I have that I know are more connected with a bunch of other artists, like they're in a community, when a song that I've worked on with them comes out, I will usually make some kind of a video or something, some kind of post on my own page, because they'll usually post that on their story. And I've gotten like a good, I think that goes under word of mouth. And I've gotten like a good amount of clients through that, because they post on the story and be like, oh yeah, and shout out, you know, James for the mix. And the nice thing about that is every now and again, when I do that, I'll get some followers that are from their circle, and it makes it easier to reach out to them because you already know they followed you, most likely because they know they like how your mixes sound. So it's not, you already have done a level of selling them on you. So like, it makes the reach out a lot easier.
Right. We'll talk about reach out later. Yeah. And then word of mouth is interesting, because I think to like the pessimist, it sounds like gatekeeping. It feels like gatekeeping, or like, what do you call that? When you hire your relatives or people that you know, what is that called again? Nepotism.
Nepotism.
It feels like nepotism, but something that we've talked about on this podcast is that nepotism is actually kind of just a practical, pragmatic solution to the way the industry works. Like, I don't think it's meant to be like this cynical, we only work with people that we know type vibe. It's more about like, most of the time, the solutions that people require in this creative industry have no defined end goal. And so when there is no like blueprint of like, what is the end goal that we're trying to reach here, then it's kind of abstract who you hire and what the, you know, the qualifications are for the person that are doing the project. So the only way that you can kind of like put people into the game is by putting your own brand referral through your own brand on the line. So it's like, hey, I know James is going to do a good job on this. And part of that is this sort of like implicit information that I'm willing to put my own brand and name and trustworthiness on the line to introduce James. Because there's like, so it's more about like that trust and how much you're willing to throw someone in. And then if you get thrown in and you do a bad job, not only do you get remembered for that, but so does the person who referred you.
So yeah, I think
it's just,
I was just going to say, like, emphasis on building the trust with them. What I mean by that is, it's at least happened to me a few times. It probably has happened to you, of a producer kind of, or like saying like, hey, if you have, I'm just reaching out to see if you have any clients that you know are looking for a producer. And I'm far less likely to recommend them to people if I don't really know anything about them or haven't experienced working with them. So it is, 'cause then again, that is like a level of trust. It reflects on me. Like, I'm only going to recommend producers to people who, producers that I know are reliable and trustworthy.
Right. And it depends on the project, but I would say that like 9 out of 10, even 19 out of 20 projects, if it comes down to a decision of who of my friends would I trust, and there's like the ultra creative but socially inept and incapable of hitting deadlines, but like absolutely beyond top S tier creative, but cannot hit deadlines, versus the guy that can hit deadlines, but he's like a B or an A tier, I'm going to 19 out of 20 times recommend the dude that's a B or A tier.
Yeah.
Like over the dude that's S tier creative. Like that's like a, just an industry thing as well. There is, yeah. I honestly think there's an argument of like just showing up and just doing the things that you say you will do.
Yeah.
Puts you in the top 50% of people.
Yeah.
Now, to get to the top 10 to 1% takes a lot more work, but like just showing up puts you in the top 50% of people. And I think that's like, I think that that's pretty true. So, yeah. And that's where the word of mouth comes in. So it and does
help. Yeah. I haven't done this, but I'm curious if you've done it. I've heard of people doing it. Have you ever like asked like artists that you work with or producers that you work with for referrals? Like directly asking?
Yeah, that's going to be in the A list. And I actually
oh, it is an A
recently.
List, sorry.
I probably should. I haven't recently and I probably should. But that's in the A list.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Let's go down to the A list. Oh, well, let's finish up on word of mouth. Like word of mouth is kind of like a mystery. I feel like it's a non-actionable thing. Like it's not something that you could do right now to do word of mouth, to spread word of mouth. It's something that mostly comes from being consistent over years, right? It's about doing that thing, those small things now, but over years that slowly snowballs. It's this accumulation of word of mouth and brand representation than it is a one-time thing. You don't just like get a Guinness Book of World Records type thing and then all of a sudden that's like that might be big enough where it could be, right? But most of the time, it's an accumulation of stuff. There's nothing you can do now. It's just from years of being consistent, years of doing well, treating clients really well. And that's another point too. Now that we're on that topic, I would even say that most of the time, word of mouth doesn't come from accolades, which is the C tier. We're going to talk about accolades a little bit later. It actually comes from customer experience. So, of course, doing good mixes is a given. Doing a good job is a given. But it's mostly going to be around how the person felt you treated them and you respected them. Like, how was the client experience working with you, communicating with you, getting files from you, doing notes with you? That experience is going to dictate more than almost anything else, including the quality of the mix, if they're going to have good recommendations for you, or they're going to recommend you to other people, if they're going to speak highly of you or think highly of you, than the actual mix itself. Okay, let's go down to A, which is something he considers it prioritized consistently. He talked about producer and engineer referrals. You asked me, James, if I've asked for referrals, and I must admit that I have not asked verbatim or like, not verbatim, explicitly for referrals, and maybe I should. Tell me what you think about that.
I'm asking because I haven't done it myself either, but I have heard of people doing it and it being successful. I've heard of people doing it like in an email, like they have like an offboarding email. It's like pretty much just says like, hope you enjoyed this. Feel free to leave a review or also like any referrals. I heard it asked like that. But yeah, that's something I do want to try out. Just asking for referrals. And because I think in my mind, it's a given. Of like, oh no, if they like me, they're going to recommend me to everyone. But I've had it, this one artist that gave me a referral, and beforehand he asked me if it was okay. Like he wanted to check because in his mind he was worried that I was potentially too busy to take on more work.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was just kind of like a refresher of like, oh yeah, it's not just a given that like, no, I'm wanting to take on more clients and more work. Right. So yeah,
that's an interesting dichotomy too. Cause like there is something to be said about looking busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually put that within the SRA tier too. It's like, that's part of the branding. The word of mouth is like looking busy, being busy brings work.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's like specifically a client acquisition strategy, but rather than a presentation.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go as far, like that's the thing with some of this stuff is like, you can get quite, I'm losing my words this morning. I have a palpable 10 IQ points dip this morning from my lack of sleep. I was going to say, what is the word that I'm looking for? The dangerous part of the 48 laws of power. Someone that's always power hungry. Taught you this word so many times. Oh man, I'm going to get back to it. But yeah, I don't want to come off as someone that's like just constantly looking for ways to have power or show power. But there is something to be said about like looking busy and how that can actually help you with your brand.
Yeah.
And get more clients. Okay. So the other thing is networking is also in the A-list, networking.
Yeah. And I assume with this, he's talking about like going to networking events, things like that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Taking people out to lunch. By the way, the word I was looking for is Machiavellian. I just remembered.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Don't be overly Machiavellian about the way that you present yourself. But networking.
Networking is something that I used to do a lot of in terms of going to networking events, and it has worked. I think this is I personally would put it in S tier if you're more in the beginning stages of your career. Because I think this is a very good way of getting people when you don't have that many clients to start with. For me, something that worked a ton when I was going to more mixers, and I've gotten like a pretty good amount. Like, I think most of my clients have come from going to networking events and then branched out from those people. But something that worked really well for me was it's usually like some kind of a pass the aux thing where people get to play their songs or whatever at a certain point. And so it would be more before it gets to that segment, I would just kind of hang out and be a cool guy talking to everyone and wouldn't even be pushing the mixing aspect of it. So that it's more of, they know that they like me and they think I'm a chill person that's safe to be around. And then when it gets to the part of presenting the song and they hear how good the mix is, it's a pretty easy sell after that. And so it's like, it's kind of the best where you don't come off as too like trying to push something. And I think people like that. Because I think I've heard artists all the time talk about how much their biggest complaint about networking events is it's so hard to just talk to people because everyone comes off like they're trying to sell you something. Sorry, right. Go ahead.
The thing with networking, which is interesting here, is that I do think, obviously, it's super helpful just to grow your circle. And coming back to it is know who you know, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's a couple things that are confusing about networking. Number one is, to your point, networking is something that happens naturally. Like if again, we brought it up before, like what we do and the outcome and the product that we create is some sort of abstract, subjective declaration, then it is some sort of objective finish, final thing, right? So when things are super subjective, like music and mixing, any sort of creative endeavor, it's going to come down to, do I trust you to do a good job? That you will give me the best that you've got, right? And that you will work with me to try to help me through my way, bring the best out of me, right? And so it's mostly just, it's 90% trust and 10% skill. I don't know if that's really a bad representation of numbers, but I mean like, that's what it feels like a lot of the time. So when you're networking, the thing that I want everybody to remember too is the thing that you just said, which isn't, hey, give me work, get to know me because I do good work. It's about, hey, get to know me. I'm a good guy.
Yeah.
I'm a good person. And then So networking is significantly more passive than I think. Like we both do this where it's like you go to like these mixers and you just say hi to people and introduce yourself to random people and you just talk to people. No pressure to talk about what you do for work. They'll ask. No pressure. Yeah. To ask like, you know, be excited in them and like, what are you up to? And talk more about them. Be interested in them. And then naturally people will be fond of you. And you'll be surprised how often people are willing to hire you off of listening to nothing that you've done in the past, just knowing mm-hmm. that they enjoyed a conversation with you. Or they just enjoy being with you.
A month or two ago, I literally got someone and I met him at a mixer like 2.5 years ago. And we haven't really talked. Like I messaged him the day after the mixer, like, yo, nice meeting you and stuff. And but we haven't talked at all like since then. It's been 2.5 years. And then out of nowhere, he messaged me to do a mix. And it's just like, we had a good conversation. We talked for a few hours. It was fun.
Right. Yeah. One way that you could think about it too is like, every person that you talk to could increase your lifetime earnings. Mm. Like if they give you one project, even if it's small, within the next 10 to 20 years, that just increases your lifetime earnings, right? There's a lot of stuff that increases a slow lifetime earnings. So I'd rather think of like progress in terms of lifetime earnings, if you want to think like that way at all. But yeah, don't like... just be chill. Just be nice. Again, it's in our line of work, the end product is a given. But also like there's a lot to be said too when like an artist that's never worked with you before, that trusts you a lot, that likes you a lot, they want to see you win. So they give you a lot more grace in the approval process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They want your mix to be good. They're on, now we're on the same team and there's like this alignment. So it's like, they're going to be more flexible, or they're going to give better notes, or they're going to like make sure you take it to the end, right? And then there's other people where it's like they don't care about you as a mixer at all. And so it's like, oh, let's just do a spec mix here. And then also, I'm not going to really give notes because I gave it to 3 other mixers. And so it's just like, I'm just going to pick one and give you no feedback. I just don't care. So it's like you want to... be friendly. And there is something that I talked about the other day with another mixer about the dangers of being too friendly, actually. Maybe we bring this up briefly. In our line of work, everybody is fairly agreeable. Most people are agreeable. I mean, just statistically, right? But so I think most creatives specifically want to be more agreeable. And so they have the hard time being super honest if you're very friendly, if you're very cool. If it's not, like, I think some of the complaints about relationships being fairly transactional is very practical, because if they aren't kind of transactional, then they feel less empowered to give you honest notes.
That's a good point.
Like there's like a disservice to the art and the song if they feel disempowered to be honest with you. So there is, I mean, it's not ideal, but I would say that like, it's good to have a strong relationship with clients, but I wouldn't push so far to be like buddy buddies with them. I think it's okay to give them space to like still allow them to give you negative feedback and not feel bad.
Okay.
So it's like, there's a weird balance there. I am saying be nice.
I have some clients that I'm like pretty buddy-buddy with. So I'm trying to think if they usually give pretty good feedback. I get what you mean, though.
But I mean, like, this is nuanced here, because not because all clients shouldn't be buddy-buddy. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
But some, like, don't push too hard to be buddy-buddy unless they want to.
I get that. Like, yeah, there's some, like, there's like a good chunk where it's like, I haven't even tried to like be really close, because I could tell that's just the vibe of our relationship, and that's okay.
Right, right. Just be okay with it, I think, is the better way of saying it. Let me say that better, because I don't think I'm pushing to be distant with your clients.
Yeah. And the last note I would say on networking, the reason why I don't do it as much anymore is usually, and this is very much generalizing, the artists going to the networking events are in the very beginning stages of their career. So they usually don't have as big of a mixing budget. And so like where I'm priced right now, and like, of course, I'm always willing to work things out or things like that. But where I'm priced right now, it's just barely outside of what usually most of the artists that I meet at these things are comfortable paying. So that is just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I will create a separate categorization within this tier list. Is there are stuff for like marketing and client acquisition, right? Which is what this list is about. And then there is stuff for PR and branding. All right, so it's like networking at the beginning stages is a marketing tactic to get sales, to acquire clients. But as you get older, as your price goes up, as you're further in your career, it changes to a PR thing. Like being seen at these events and talking to fans, talking to people that know your work, being seen as someone that is active in the music industry is not so much going to get you clients directly, but it's going to show, it's going to make change into like presence and PR and branding. This person is around. This person is a real person. This guy is nice and friendly. And like, again, anybody that's nice, that's doing well, automatically gets this label of, oh, this person's so humble. Right. And that's all just PR. It's not going to immediately get you clients, but it's going to spread word of mouth a little bit and create better branding. So although this list is about the client acquisition marketing side, I will mention when it's good for PR, because there are things that are good for PR, which goes into tier B here, which is Instagram. There's three things in the B tier, according to Nick here, is Instagram. And then there's artist manager and label relationships. And then there's local scene presence. And I think there's also, we're going to have to do another subcategory of like large music industry cities like Nashville, New York, and Los Angeles, even Atlanta. And then versus Utah, Provo, Utah, right? We're just smaller music cities, not non-music cities. Where like local scene presence is going to weigh a lot more and might even go up in the tier list in smaller cities, whereas like in bigger cities, it might go down, honestly. Instagram is interesting. I don't remember off the rip the context that he gave, but I think, again, it's more about PR and branding and image. Showing people, he mentioned it, it's like it's more about showing who you are, what kind of personality that you have, what kind of person you are, than it is about like getting clients.
Yeah, like my most successful Instagram is more of just, I mainly post just so that the people I do meet, have met at networking events or in other cases, I'm just on top of mind, because you never know when they're working on their next project and stuff. So that's my main reason for doing it. It's just so I'm like, I'm still present in their world without having to like send a message once a week or something like that.
Yeah. Top of mind is first to hire.
Exact.
Okay. So Instagram is all right. I wouldn't go, you have some cool strategies on Instagram about like DMing people. Like if someone follows you, you send them a DM. You even have like a little, I don't know how much you want to say, but you have like even like a little script that you can personalize.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just didn't know if that went under. I thought I saw a cold outreach, but technically doesn't go under that, I guess. But yeah. Instagram is kind of similar to what I was mentioning with the word of mouth when we were on the word of mouth part. But like, I like posting when a client that I have, an artist that I know is very much in the network of working with other artists and they have a good community, because then they'll usually post it on the story. And when I get followers out of that I know follow the other artists, it's a far easier DM to reach out, because they likely followed you purely because of your mixing. And I have a script that I have written up in my notes, and I'm able to modify it whenever to like whatever the artist is I'm reaching out to. So it's if it's someone that has followed me, I just reach out like, hey, I checked out your music after you followed me. I thought your music was really cool. I would love to talk about potentially working together. Would you be down to schedule a call? Or if I know they're in LA, I try to schedule a lunch. I found that lunches tend to convert more into like someone that ends up wanting me to like mix her music. Right. Yeah, that's my main Instagram use. And that has, if it's someone that's followed me and I like start messaging them, that has a far higher success rate. And then just reaching out on DMs to someone who doesn't follow me, that's like, it's far less of a percentage that gets back and schedules a meeting.
That's cold outreach. That's cold outreach. Yeah, so it's like okay, the people that follow you and you DMing the people that are already looking for you, that's definitely more of warm. A lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, that's been my experience.
That sounds like that's been really successful for you, actually.
It has. I've gotten some artists I really love working with now out of that.
And so just sharing in general and then DMing people that naturally look for you afterwards.
Yeah. So if an artist follows me, I'll like check out their music. And if it is someone that I would love to work with, then I'll message them. Yeah, no, it has worked very well. And it is kind of nice too, because if you could get that lunch to happen or that call to happen, since they followed you for the mixing, in my experience, they're usually the one to bring up the mixing in conversation before I do.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, see here. Artist manager label relationship. So I would say that sometimes managers and labels fall under repeat clients. And if they are repeat clients, they move to S tier, right? Like that is awesome. It is repeat clients.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, and this is a higher level thing in the tier list here, because most people aren't working at the, like most engineers that are listening to this podcast aren't working with the managers of artists or labels where they have big budgets or whatever. I would say this is one of those things where my advice that I said earlier about not keeping it, like not being super duper buddy-buddy might be okay. There are going to be times where my advice is totally wrong, but I think it's okay where they're not like super duper close, because they especially like want to keep it transactional to a certain degree. Especially, again, their end goal is to have viral songs, to have songs go big. And sometimes I find them to be a lot more like, not skeptical. What is the word that I'm looking for? Just, what is that called? Not superficial. What is the word that I'm looking, not existential. What is it called when you go under a ladder and it's bad luck?
Superstitious.
Yeah, I find like at that point, there's a lot more superstition that they're working with too. It's like, okay, they hired you and the song went well, so they continue to hire you because they think you're part of the secret sauce. And you might be. I'm not denying that. But just be aware that it's just different. It's just a huge game. I would put local networking with artists directly, producers directly, to be a lot better than label relationships and artist managers, you know, and I think that's fair, fine and fair.
Interesting.
Like, I think it's still important. There's a reason why it's still in B, right?
Yeah. But
over just general networking, knowing people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I think that's actually not as important as people think. I think the perception of like knowing who, it's all about who you know. And then people are like, it's all about managers and label A&R and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. Maybe not as much as you think. If it does work and it becomes consistent, it's huge. It's like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But that's not something you can force. That's definitely not something you can force.
Yeah.
Okay. Local scene presence. This is interesting. It's still in the B tier list. I think that even if you are in LA and you're like beginner intermediate stage, local scene presence is going to be big. If you're outside of LA, New York, Atlanta, Nashville, it's huge. It is almost in its entirety. Like, this is the thing. Like, it's almost worth the cost of free work, I would argue. There is free work as is in the F tier in this list. And I agree with that for the most part. But like, if you were in a small industry and you have people that you just need to be known, just have some presence, dude, just becoming more involved with the local scene. There's ways that you can give free work without, while still maintaining the levels of trust that you lose with offering free work. For example, sponsoring local Battle of the Bands. The winner gets free recording time. Not only does that like casually siphon through the people that are not as good, you know, but sift through those people, but it also, you maintain this level of authority and trustworthiness while being able to give away free work. So
yeah, I
can attest
to DK did that in Provo. And then when I came back in the day, like when I came,
I know I did that, but I didn't know you knew about that.
Well, it's because when I started mixing and stuff, any person I could find that had somewhat of a budget was already working with you. And so it was tricky to find. So I had to like find people who are more new, started getting more into it after you moved out, because like it was tricky finding people with a budget that wasn't already working with you.
That's crazy. I just ate so much of the competition that I made everybody else go hungry.
Yeah, you became a monopoly.
That's crazy.
But no, it was like a funny little, I was like, damn, good job, DK.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The effects of the economy on my presence. But local scene is amazing for smaller music cities. I'm serious. Like, do not underestimate that. And again, like thinking about it in ways where, again, if you're gonna do free work, which is totally fine, the problem with free work is that it's usually at the expense and sacrifice of trustworthiness and branding. Right? Like, even if the mix is good, it's hard for anybody that doesn't know anything about mixing to trust that you did a good job, because at the end of the day, it was free. It's just classic buyer psychology. But if you're like, if you win first place at this Battle of the Bands, you earned it, then all of a sudden the reward, which is a free mix or free recording or whatever, it maintains this level of authority and trustworthiness, because now there's value to the prize. So it's still free work. You're just maintaining that level of authority.
Nice.
Which changes that drastically, right? The free test drastically. We'll talk about it later. What are some other free local scene stuff? I mean, just being at the Battle of the Bands, going to shows, local shows. I honestly think going to local shows is way infinitely better than going to like touring bands.
And that works a lot with reaching out, like messaging, like, yo, I'm excited for your guys' show. I'll be there this Friday. It'd be cool to meet, to like talk for a sec after or something like that. It'd be cool to like, or like just not even say that, but just say like, I'll be at your show and stuff. And usually they'll say something like, oh, we should like just come say hi after or whatever at the merch table.
Oh, that's a good idea. DM them before.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm coming tonight. Just say,
yeah, yo, I'm excited for your guys' show. It usually goes pretty well. Or they'll usually even spam out like before their show, like all their followers, like, hey, we have a show coming out, and like the DMs and stuff. And that's like a good way, like, yo, yeah, I'll be there. And just so that like, it creates, that's worked like decently well.
I love that. Okay. Next in the tier list is C, useful in the right context. Client success is the first one. I think he meant that in the sense of like showcasing clients and their success. So for example, we got 100 million streams with this song, which I think goes along with like accolades too. Like, I have these awards. Yeah. There's a couple things, like Lou and I talk about the nuance of this quite often. Client success and accolades is a more of a PR thing. I will be dumb if I ever lied and said that I get no clients based on the accolades and client success of my past clients. That's not true.
Yeah.
But I do get some, and some of them, a couple of them are repeat clients, but that's not something that you chase. That's something that naturally happens.
Yeah, I think what puts these in C tier is that those are two aspects that are more or less out of your control. You can't you can't make the client success. You can't make the accolades.
Right. Yeah. So I think that that's fair where that's at. Useful in the right context. Like, it's good to have. It's great PR. It can naturally bring in some clients, not a ton. Depends on the level of accolades and the level of client success. And but I will say that there's also some red flag aspect to this too. Like if someone's coming to you, I'm going to take back what I said. There's not too much of a red flag aspect of that. There is kind of theoretically, but most of my personal clients and my personal experience, anybody that comes to you because of a specific sound you were able to make that you've done before usually ends up being okay. Being great. Where it does become red flag, I was thinking of gear. Like if they come to you because you have specific gear, that's a little scary. Okay, next thing that's useful in the right context in the C tier here is YouTube. And we're going to go podcast too. In fact, I would go podcast to be lower, possibly even in D tier as far as like client acquisition. And it depends on how you do it as well. So YouTube and podcast, we're going to put them in the same category. Any sort of like content creation is going to be C tier. I have had people say like, oh, how do you do well in the music industry? It seems like it's mostly just content creation these days. And I will tell you right now from all the professional, like making money from content people because they're doing so well, how many of them are actually making, bringing in clients enough to feed their family? And that's almost none of them, right? Usually people that are doing doing really well, it's great PR. It's great trust. They're going to get some clients from it, but it's not most of the time. It's going to be like trickle clients, and it's not something that's like life-changing, right? All of a sudden, I got 100,000 subscribers for audio education, and now the best way to monetize content is to sell your own thing. So sell your own course, sell ads, sell product placement, sell... courses are the most popular. Selling your own plugins, selling templates, selling samples, whatever. Selling your own product is the best way to monetize content creation. It is not something that is important for client acquisition for your mixing work, for your mastering work, for your production work. It's decent PR. Decent is a weird word, but it's like... decent PR, but it's not the thing that's going to get you mixing clients, get you recording clients. It doesn't mean that it's zero. It just means that it's like, it's unreliable. And it's the amount of work versus the output for what you want. And so like, I'll actually find more people that kind of get their head in the sand of like, you know, they do so well with their content creation and they make so much money from running ads and doing stuff from that platform, selling courses or plugins, that they kind of get trapped where they no longer feel a drive to find clients. Or all of a sudden, those advertising money goes up when the economy goes down and now they're out of work, right? I find the opposite problem, right? Over-relying on that sort of stuff, even if it does go well. So I would say do it because it's good PR. You get to show your branding and show who you are as a person. And that's part of the reason why we do it now. It's also like good for the study of mixing because like me talking about this shit helps me be reflective with my own work. So it's good for the growth of my own mixing.
It kind of keeps us on our toes.
Yeah. There's some responsibility, you know, that we put on ourselves. I would say that with that sort of stuff as well, if you are going to build plugins, if you are going to build a course, that immediately goes to like S tier. If you do have something to sell, that is actually like more than like a white glove service, that's S tier. 100% S tier.
Cool.
Okay. SEO, search engine optimization, specifically leading clients to our website. That would almost go down to like D or F tier, honestly. There's only a couple instances where I would actually put that up. One, with your content. So if you're going to do a podcast or a YouTube channel, SEO does matter with your titles. SEO does matter with the podcast. The fact that our podcast is called Mixing Music Podcast, immediately, we're like the number one mixing podcast in the world, like post-production audio podcast in the world. Not because we're the most trustworthy or the most accolades. It's because we're the top hit for everybody that looks up anything about audio engineering and mixing. right?
Yeah.
So that is important, and it's made this podcast completely passive and awesome, right? Easy for us. And I've had to do no micro content. I've had to do no advertising. It's just completely natural off the algorithm. But as far as like getting clients to my website, nothing on my website, none of the SEO stuff that I do on my website is going to bring in clients, really. The only time where like I even want random clients off the internet, they're going to be looking in marketplaces like Fiverr or what is it? Not Upwork.
Sound better.
Stuff like that. Yeah. And even then, that's not like high quality clients. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
any same. Thoughts on that?
No, it's just kind of same. The only traffic I get to my website are people I've already met that like just followed me on Instagram or something like that. That's
yeah. So again, for finding clients, mixing clients, especially ads that build with you, not great. For finding people to check out your content, to sell something from your content, like a course or a plugin, the SEO is going to be S or A tier.
Yeah.
Again, not in our line of work, unfortunately. For mixing, if that's your end goal. Okay, credit-based discovery. I think we talked about that with accolades and client success.
Yeah.
Spec work. Dude, I'm going to put this up above for me. I love spec work.
Yeah.
One, I love mixing. So even if I don't get paid for it, like, I love it. Like, I like the process of mixing. And I'd rather mix a song for 4 to 6 hours and not like be given a proper chance to convince them that I'm worth it than to fuck around and make videos for 6 to 8 hours, which might be like one or two videos.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of like just like a chance to get your foot in the door. So then you actually had a chance for them to hear your mixing.
So those that don't know, it
could open up people who would in other cases not be open to trying you out.
For sure. And those who don't know, spec work is like, hey, you only have to pay for this if you like it. So I'll do the mix for free and I'll take on the risk. And you only have to pay for it if you like it. And with something like FilePass or Samply or other sort of like those sort of Dropbox or cloud file sharing services, you can lock downloads. Right.
Yeah.
So the way that I do it with FilePass, and you could do I don't know if you could do a Samply or HighNote.
You use
HighNote.
Yeah.
Where it's like it locks the download capabilities unless you pay for it. So I'll set an invoice. So I'll be like, okay, this much money. And if you like it, then you pay for it and you can download the file. If you don't like it, leave it as is. I'll eat it. I'll eat the cost. And like getting a chance like that, especially because like what a good mix is there's two ways to figure out if a mix is good. One is in a state of permanence, which means that they aren't hiring out for a mix anymore because it's already released, right? The second way, which I think is useful too, is in comparison to other mixes. And what better way to show that your mix is good relative to other mixes than to do a spec mix, right? Because now you have other mixes that this guy is looking at, like in a mix competition.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, a lot of very heavy hitting engineers that refuse to do like mix competitions or like spec work or like shootouts. Dude, I love it. Partially because I'm a cocky son of a bitch. And the second thing is because like that's one of the only ways to be seen as an objectively better mixer.
Yeah, I like that.
Like relative to 3 or 4 other mixes or 1 or 2 other mixes, that is the only way that to be seen as objectively better.
Yeah.
And I'd rather take that shot 9 out of 10 times and lose half of them. Because if you win that, dude, like my highest paying client over the years, like most repeat, most like growth that they've had as a company came from a shootout. I've literally made near like in my career so far, I'm just shy of $100,000, like 6 figures from just this one client from a shootout. Because they haven't even bothered to check anyone else after they did that.
Yeah.
They haven't even bought, they're like, say like, they've probably had people like, can I mix for you? And they'll be like, no, why? This guy at DK does so well and we already send him everything. He already knows our systems. It's fully integrated with how we run things in our business. And we did a shootout, so we know that he's objectively great. And on top of that, we've been working with him for like 7-8 years, so we know that he's gotten better since then. Yeah. As we've gotten better, as we've scaled too. And also, we've had, through all the years, we've done well with him. So it's like, we know it's not, we know that he's doing well and good enough work for things to go viral. It's like, it's so not in their best interest to try anyone else. After
and to put a little plug in there, we do have, on the exclusive podcast, we do have an episode where we specifically talk about like ways to win a mixed shootout. Like little techniques and stuff that I think was very helpful.
That was a few months ago. Like half a year ago. Yeah, it's on there. Ways to mix a mix shootout. I forgot about that. Yeah, we did. Anyway, so I think this actually should go up. I think the only thing about spec work is that you will lose a lot of them. And also, how do you get those? I have no idea how you convince people to try a spec mix.
Yeah.
Because usually they ask for it.
Yeah, it's better when they ask for it because then you asking them for it could work, but it's one of those like image things where it could come off a certain way.
Again, if you can do it in a way that you don't lose authority or trustworthiness, then it's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's hard to ask for... Yeah, it's hard to offer spec work without losing some credibility or without losing some of that authoritative presence. So I think it's all right, actually, B or C tier. Okay, going into the D tier, social media.
I think we pretty much covered that with Instagram. Yeah. What more can I say?
Okay, Facebook groups. This used to be a lot more popular. This is,
I don't have. I have zero experience with this. Facebook groups.
I have lots of experience running Facebook groups, but for real estate marketing. For real estate marketing, nothing to do with mixing. I think the idea is like be active on like these mixing and mastering Facebook groups to show authority. Yeah. If you're going to do that, start a YouTube channel or a podcast.
Yeah, because then you have to use Facebook. That's kind of gross.
Yeah, dude. And honestly, too, I'm thinking about like on Reddit. If you're the guy that's like doing hyper insightful stuff on Reddit, you're going to be known as the asshole on Reddit rather than like, this guy's credible. Because it's also mostly to peers. The only way, again, this goes along with like social media, YouTube, and like SEO presentation, online presentation. If you want to sell your mixing services, don't make mixing content. I've said this so many times, I'm going to repeat it again. If you want mixing clients, make production and songwriting and recording stuff. Like the people that will hire you. Make stuff for managers. Make stuff for labels. Don't make stuff for your peers because your peers, other mix engineers, are not going to give up and say, I'm worse than DK, so I'm going to hire outsource to DK. Like you might have one-offs of that, but like you're not, unless you're selling classes or unless you're selling tutelage, mentorship, or, you know, that's, it's not, you're not selling to your peers.
Yeah.
So no point is like, being on the mixing and mastering page on Reddit or Facebook is like going to, it's a PR thing. It's not at all a client acquisition thing.
Yeah.
Website inquiries. It's good to have a website, but don't expect people to like come to your website. The only reason people go through my website, and I've had a very low friction website or like a conscious friction website. I have some friction on purpose. It's because when people go to my Instagram, instead of DMing me, they notice that there's a process to do it. And people that go through my process understand that there is a process. So there is some conscious friction in order to sift through the people that are serious and not.
Mm-hmm.
Just having a website is okay. Getting people to go to your website, like through ads, not as important.
Yeah.
Like through SEO and ads, not as important.
Yeah, website's more of an image thing for me.
Yeah, it's PR and it's funneling. Serious people who, people that are serious enough to visit your website are like, you want them to fill out your quote request. Again, this is different if you're like competing in the internet space in a different way where you're doing like $200 a month, pay for checkout for it right now. And there's some people that do that. that like do well with that. Like, it's not personal at all. It's completely transactional, completely frictionless. You can go on their website right now, book a mix, schedule a time, and you'll have it. You'll have something within a few days, right?
Yeah.
And there's no contact with the engineer at all. It's completely non-personal, but it is a, there are clients and people that look for that. They just want something cheap. And the problem with that though is offering that is that it takes a lot of system and it takes a lot of work and learning how to do that systematically, logistically. But also, there is a lack of warmth with clients, lack of trust. Like the clients just want something.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, which isn't bad.
You are, what's the word? Dispendable or whatever. Like you're not.
You are dispendable. The worst part about that, that's not so bad.
To a degree.
That's not so bad because they're not hiring you because they're looking for that. They're possibly hiring you because they're not looking for that. The thing that sucks about that is if you do your business that way, now your price is competing with other people online, which means people from like India.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you as an American or as a European cannot compete with the wages of someone in Mumbai. You know, like you cannot.
Yeah.
You cannot compete on the internet with someone, you know, from Bali. You just can't. Their wages are too low and they're willing to do it. So what happens is you're going to be charging mixes $100, $200. And that's it. And you're competing based on price. And it's very, very difficult to make it more personal and scale in that sense. It's very difficult to scale after you've already done that. So just consider that. But it does work. I know there are some companies that do that really, really well. I can name some. Like Sage Audio has a great YouTube video. By the way, my buddy is now the owner of Sage Audio. Ryan Morris. He recently became the more. He's the voice that does all the videos. He did all of the video editing. And he is the voice behind all of those videos. I need to call him.
Cool.
Say hi. But I think he recently became one of the owners. That's like a classic. This is a lot more common with mastering engineers, but even with mixing, I think like Audio Animals does that too. There's a couple big mixing engineer YouTubers where they seem to be doing well off of just this. And you go on their websites like, $200, $150 to $300 a mix with some add-ons, which is fine, which is great. But it is different. Okay. And that's also like the top tier, like the best people that do that. Audio Animals. And I'm thinking of one other dude. I don't remember his channel name. Like the best people charge $200 to $300 a mix. Whereas like people that are like us, the best people in the white glove side of the industry charge like $7,000 to $10,000 a mix. So consider that. Okay. Let's see here. Spec work. We already did that. Social
free feedback audits. I have no experience with that, so I can't really comment on it. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's more of, like giving feedback. So like on our podcast, we said we'd give you free feedback and stuff. That did help. It's better than anything else that we've done as far as conversion rate goes, but it's still like, it's a lot of work. I'm considering doing that again, but paid. Not to make clients, but as a form of selling a service. Because I think I do. I think I'm genuinely really good at giving practical feedback.
Yeah.
I have a weird amount of practice doing that alongside my experience. So like if I do like $100 to $150 and you send me songs privately, I can send you like a 20-minute video of me like breaking down your mix.
Yeah.
Pulling it up in Pro Tools, listening to it. I think that that's actually really useful. I would pay $100, $150 for really high level feedback. I would have done that. I think that that's like, I feel very ethical about that. I feel like it's really good, but I don't think it's going to bring me mixed clients. We'll see.
Yeah.
Come back to you about this.
Yeah.
Educational content. I think we kind of talked about that on YouTube.
Yeah, we covered that.
I think educational content for the people that will be hiring you, not your peers, is actually higher up than just like funny videos, like entertainment content. I think entertainment content is a lot less converting than educational content if done correctly.
Yeah.
So where YouTube is in the C tier and educational content is in D tier, I might switch those around for me, depending on the nuance of those. Like educational stuff on YouTube is much better than than like entertainment stuff, especially if you're trying to sell something. Again, classes, yeah. courses, anything. Podcasts and interviews, like being on other people's podcasts, doing, going, getting interviews, getting write-ups. That's straight PR.
It could. Yeah, just PR. I'm trying to think. Free tests. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Now we're going into F tier. Go ahead. You're starting into F tier.
Oh, so yeah, I was just like free test. I don't know what that means.
Just free work.
Free work? Oh, free work. Yeah, same thing. Nowadays, I do more free work for people that I already... Free work or like very heavily discounted work for people that I already have a good relationship with. That like... the way I'll put it is like I know them well enough to know that it's not a taking advantage of me kind of a thing, but more of like a fun passion project or like something like that.
Yeah. I think at the free work, I'm not going to lie to you. At the beginning of my career, when I was a college student with nobody to my name, free work was everything. And I'm never, ever, ever going to take away, like, because not just free work.
Yeah.
As far as like getting new clients, maybe it didn't help so much. But as far as getting better, because imagine the contrast of like paying thousands of dollars a semester to maybe mix one or two songs for class versus doing free work. So like not paying anything to get practice in. So if it's about getting better, free work is S tier.
Or even like just if you don't have any songs in your portfolio to show, it's like a portfolio builder.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. It's the impossible very beginning to of the sell career. Yourself without it, yeah.
Dude, again, like, this is later in my career. It wasn't at the very, very beginning, but I was still doing a lot of, like, near free work for... In 2019, I did 1,019 mixes, songs, in that year. And my God, I was... Holy crap, I was so busy, and it was not good, healthy for me. But I got a lot better. Like a lot better. And so it'd be foolish for me to say that that wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
A lot of it was free. I mean, of course it was. I had to hit 1,000 songs. That was my goal. So yeah it's crazy. Anyway, so just consider that. No, I wouldn't be so prideful to say. Yeah. And another way too, like later in your career, intermediate to advanced, like offering free work, as long as you maintain that level of authority, like we said, if someone asks you to do it for free and you're willing to, like that's different from offering it.
Yeah.
You maintain a level of authority. Lead magnets is something that you offer, like Lose Pro Tools template in exchange for your contact information, like an email or phone number.
Okay. I was wondering what those were. Yeah.
If I'm selling a class or if I'm selling a plugin, lead magnets can be great. Lead magnets... For mixing? Hell no. Yeah, total F tier. Like, I have, partially because of y'all, like, I have a big list of people I rarely ever use our email list. So, F tier, and I don't get anybody from it. Paid advertising. Yeah. If you're not selling a class, if you're not selling a product or a transactional mixing service, like we talked about before, not worth it. It might be good for PR. Yeah. It's great for testing. Like, if you're trying to figure out how to optimize your brand, dude, like running a bunch of different ads that you change one variable and it all leads to a dead link, right? Mm-hmm. It all leads to nothing, but you like see click through. So if like, for example, with the podcast, if I use the color yellow instead of the color blue and see which one gets clicked on more and I spend $10 on each ad, and I just change the artwork, or if I change the font, or if I change the demographic, right? Changing one variable and testing based on ads is awesome, but not for like client acquisition and getting clients.
Yeah.
So that one's very specific, not very good for client acquisition. Mm-hmm. Okay, cold outreach.
Yeah, cold outreach. And there's one that like I've spoken on it. For when I've done the cold, so they don't already follow me, cold outreach... I would say it could work great, but it is a lot more of you're casting a larger net. Like, of all the cold outreach, I would say 1 in 10 respond. And of those ones that respond, it's only 1 in 5 that will schedule a meeting. And so it can... It's one of the things where, like, you, if you're doing it, you need to be... in my opinion, more strategic about it. There's some people who will just like spam and send as many as possible just to any artist they could find. For me, I'm more touchy or more, I have more of a funnel of like, I like their music and they seem to post consistently. Like I have a screening process before I reach out. But yeah, so that is one that you will just have to be used to like a lot not responding.
Cool.
So it's one of the things where it I would put it above F, but it's definitely not like S.
Okay, last one, before and after content. This is specific to Nick. He just said that it feels tacky. I do agree with him a little bit, like, because you're like kind of doing it, making other people look bad. Like, look how bad this guy did sound. You're like exposing your clients. I think that if you are in smaller music industries, like there is a time where it could be useful. It does build trust.
Yeah, I
just
used to do it.
And I used to do it too. And I think I still would, but like privately and carefully and like consider the feelings of who you do it with, right?
Yes. I always check it off with the artist before. I now do, instead of before and after, I just do like, if I do a video, it would just be like what I did for the vocal and like not even showing it before and just like, kind of thing.
I think that's really good.
And it is cool because then like the audience, the artist likes reposted because then the audience, people love hearing like an isolated vocal. For some reason, it just has this cool effect when you hear it. But yeah.
And then it goes back to the educational content. Like it is better than doing just a straight up before and after. Like if you make it educational, if you do, but again, that's more like PR. I don't know if you're going to get a ton of clients consistently from something like that. And that's another thing too. You'll notice there's two things that he breaks it down. There's like industry stuff, which means like being around the local area. And then there's like classic selling a product online type stuff, like your transactional stuff. And most of those are like in the F or D tier for what we do. We're not selling a product. It's a white glove service, right? So it's like, it's about trustworthiness. It's about being an authoritative figure, like a thought leader in a space or like being an authority in a space. Whereas we're not trying to sell a product and say how awesome this product is. The last thing that I want to bring up too, there's another form of this as well. You can split it up into service versus like industry service versus product. I would also say you can split this up. Oh crap, what was I going to say? Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. There was something super useful I was about to say and I totally lost it. I was going to say like for new clients, like almost all of this stuff except for the top three or four, except for A tier and S tier, is all about getting new clients, acquiring a constant stream of new clients. Where I'm going to tell you right now, most of the stuff, and the reason why the stuff is in A and S tier is because almost everyone in the industry, all of our money is made from returning and consistent clients.
Yeah.
So like, do not rely on a constant stream of new clients. Rely more on keeping clients coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the other way we split this up. Like A, word of mouth, repeat client, producer, engineer referrals, networking. These are all repeat clients. The producer that refers you stuff, meeting people. This is all in order to create returning, consistent clients. Stuff like an Instagram DM is like a new client acquisition. That's why it's not as good as word of mouth and repeat clients in general. So just consider that. Like you want people that are going to be there with you for decades is the ideal client.
Yeah.
All right. And anything else that you want to say, James?
No, I guess two things. One is keep in mind that there are many different ways. And so like DK and I have taken very different paths in how we have acquired clients. It's just understand there's not one. Find out which one works best for you and your personality. Maybe the networking thing doesn't work the best with your personality or something like that. Or maybe it does work great. I'd say figure out what works best for you and experiment with all of them. And last thing is check out the exclusive podcast episodes. Patreon.com/MasonMusic.
Yeah, or MasonMusicPodcast.com/exclusive for exclusive
episodes.
There
we go, it's great because like, as you can tell here, we talk about philosophy, all these things are more of the big picture things, but there it is every episode is very specific. And yeah, like DK said, ad-free, it's very specific and we go into like, it's very technical. So we make sure that everything focuses on different technical aspects. And it's fun. There's like over 250 episodes waiting for you to listen. And so go check it out. And we post it. We do it every week as well.
Great. Awesome. Thanks, James. I will. You reminded me of one last thing that I want to say is all of this with the caveat, like you said, that everybody has a different experience here. The thing that I want to end with, which I don't know if this is enough to be a whole nother episode, is that even the most successful people that you know do not know why that they're successful.
Yes.
Right? If they say it's because I work out, it's because I do this, even their worst days, they started with those things. You wake up at 4 a.m. and work out, great. Your worst day ever, you also woke up at 4 a.m. and worked out, right?
Yeah.
Like it is difficult and even bad to say it's just genetic superiority, right? Like, I'm thinking about like professional athletes. Like asking a professional athlete why they're so good is fascinating because everybody else has done the same practice routines, and yet for some reason, they're just better at them.
Yeah.
Right? So most people don't know, like, why are these mixers at the top? There are some things, obviously, it's a collection of choices and being totally lucky and just being able to monetize and, maximize those opportunities, for sure. But how did you do that? Anybody that tells you anything, the problem is that anybody with any of that, like, upper epsilon success, I would even put ourselves up there, not because, like, we're winning Grammys and having hyper success here, but like making a full-time living, which would put us in the top 1% of this sort of stuff in LA, right? But I will say the difference isn't so much what we do. We don't know because we don't have cross-experiential contrast. Like I've never made different decisions. Like I've never lived another life and done a different path. So I cannot say for certain that this is a better path. I can tell you what I've done and how that seems to have worked for me. And I can think about it and try to decipher why that worked for me and the conclusions that I came to. But at the end of the day, nobody actually knows what the fuck that they're doing, which is like, it's kind of hard and sad, but it's not meant to be pessimistic and cynical. It's meant to be like, do what you want at the end of the day and just be conscious and think about it and like create logical reasoning yourself to get to these conclusions. I'm just giving you this information buffet.
You
even if you ask Tizio, it's like, okay, it was because he assisted work with these producers. How did he get in that room? Like kind of like,
like
he can say those specific things that are specific to him, but then there's going to be somebody else that had none of that experience, that have never interned for anybody or that assisted for anybody. And they're doing just as good, if not better. And it's like the exact opposite of what this other person said. So nobody really, really knows. The only thing that people know for sure is being consistent, being reliable, just showing up every single day without fail, being in love with the craft. Those are the things that are like for sure, 100%.
Yeah. Amen.
Okay. Cool. On that note, thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today.